He gestured for me to conceal it behind a fall of rubble. There was no way I was giving Malouche the opportunity to use the weapon against me. Besides, I'd already established that it only killed parts of him, and parts weren't enough. I wanted all of him dead. "How do I kill a vampire?" I asked Barons.
"Hope he's not."
"I really don't like that answer." He shrugged.
"It's the only one I have to offer, Miss Lane."
I could feel Malouche approaching. Barons was right. Somehow the meal we'd shared had linked us. I had no doubt he could sense me as clearly as I could him. The vampire was incensed and hungry. He'd been unable to enter his larder. Whatever Barons had done had successfully sealed the entrance. I told you my inscrutable host has a bottomless bag of tricks. I'm really beginning to wonder where he gets them. He was near. My body hummed with anticipation. Malouche stepped into the opening. His hood was down, and his smile was beyond gruesome.
"You're still no match for me, bitch."
He was framed in the doorway, backlit by torchlight, his dark robes rustling, and I could smell the emotions wafting from his rotted flesh. He smelled as fearless as I felt. He believed what he'd just said. I would prove him wrong. I narrowed my eyes, assessing him. He might think himself my superior, but my escape bothered him, and he wasn't going to step into the cavern until he knew how I'd managed it. I taunted. "Come and get me, then."
"How did you get out of your cell?"
"You left it unlocked," I lied. He considered that a moment.
"There's no way you could have moved. I broke both your legs. And your arms. How did you get the unseely?"
"The same way I spelled your little refrigerator down there. I did a good job, didn't I? You couldn't get in. I know a little black magic of my own. You underestimated me." He studied me. He knew how powerful the spell on his larder was, and if I was capable of performing black magic to that degree, I was capable of a great deal. I felt him relax infinitesimally.
"This makes things much more interesting.
You know, I toyed with this idea.
Now we'll rot together. I'll feed you more and stab you with your own fucking spear."
Obviously, he didn't know it was missing yet. "Bring it on," I purred. He unfastened his robe and let it drop to the floor. His frothy lace shirt was badly stained. He was wearing stiff, tight leather pants, I suspected for the same reason he wore the stiff gloves. I needed him inside the cavern. Then Barons would spell the exit, and there would be no way out. I did my boxer dance. "Come on, Johnny, let's play." He lunged through the entrance with inhuman speed and closed one of his stiff-gloved hands around my throat. I saw Barons loom up behind him and shot him a wordless command, "Don't interfere." I grabbed Malouche's wrist and kneed him in the groin with the strength of 10 men. The flesh between his legs was too soft. My knee slid a few inches into his body.
"No feeling there, bitch," he spat.
"What about here?" I punched him in the ear with all my strength. Blood spurted from his skull, and he reeled sideways and staggered. I watched the wound heal as quickly as it had opened. Would I do that? I found out soon enough. He broke my nose. It reassembled itself. I nearly tore his arm from his shoulder. It dangled uselessly for a few moments, then he punched me with it again, strong as ever.
"When I finish with you, bitch, I'm going to Ashford. Remember your little confession," he taunted, "telling me you had a mother there. Maybe I'll keep you alive long enough to see what I do to her."
I pummeled his hated face into a mass of bloody flesh. It would end here, now. Malouche was never walking out of these caves again if I had to stay down here for all eternity killing him. He tried to rip my ear off. I almost bit him, but thought twice, not exactly clear on vampire rules. I didn't want his blood anywhere near my mouth. I kicked him in the knee. When it shattered and he went down, I fell on him, kicking, punching, snarling. I felt something inside me devolving, and I liked it. Time lost all meaning to me. We were virtually indestructible machines.
We beat each other senseless, long past the point of reason. I existed for one thing, to make him go down, stay down, and never move again. I no longer knew who he was. I no longer cared who I was. Things had deconstructed to the basest terms. Malouche no longer even had a name or a face. He was enemy. I was destroyer. I understood only the imperative of battle, the appetite to kill. I slammed him into the cavern wall. He smashed me into a man-sized stalagmite. It crumbled from the impact. I picked myself up and we crashed together again, punching, kicking, grunting. Suddenly Barons was between us, forcing us apart. I turned on him, snarling. What the hell are you doing?
You!
Malouche looked stunned.
How did you get here? I left the cuff in the alley. There's no way you tracked me.
I stared at Barons. How had he found me?
Stay out of this, Barons. It's my fight.
Barons caught me completely off guard with a half a dozen rapid-fire punishing blows to my head and stomach. I doubled over, dazed. Malouche laughed. I was bent low, ribs cracking and rehealing for several seconds. My chest burned like a lung had been pierced. Malouche stopped laughing with a strangled sound. When I shot up, Barons had Malouche by an arm around his neck. He hit me again, and I went right back down. Barons had held back when he'd punched me before, given me a love tap compared to what he was dishing out now. The bastard did it to me three more times. Each time I straightened, his fist pistoned into my face before I could even get all the way up. It felt like my brain was rattling in my skull. The fifth time I rose, Malouche was on the ground, unmoving. I could see why. His head was no longer attached to his shoulders. He'd killed him. Barons had stolen my revenge, cheated me of the pleasure of destroying the one who'd nearly destroyed me. I whirled on him. He was spattered with blood, breathing hard, head down, eyes narrowed, and fury was rolling off him in thick, dangerous waves. How dare he be furious with me? I was the wronged party. My battle was interrupted. Bloodlust was bottled up inside me, a turbo engine revved to redline. The vamp was mine, Barons!
Inspect his teeth, Miss Lane,
he said tightly.
They were cosmetic enhancements. He was no vampire.
I punched him lightly in the shoulder. I don't care what he was. It was my fight, you bastard! He punched me back with the same light, warning force.
You are taking too long to finish it up.
Who are you to decide how long is too long? I gave him another tap in the shoulder. He returned the blow with equal force.
You were enjoying it.
I was not.
You were smiling, bouncing on the balls of your feet, egging him on.
I was trying to end the fight. I punched his shoulder hard this time.
You are way past trying to end it,
he snapped, punching me back. I nearly fell over.
You were prolonging it. You were glorying in it.
You don't know what the feck you're talking about, I shouted.
I couldn't tell the difference between the two of you anymore,
he roared. I smashed my fist into his face. Lies roll off us. It's the truths we work hardest to silence.
Then you weren't looking hard enough. I'm the one with boobs.
I know you're the one with boobs that are in my fucking face every fucking time I turn around.
Maybe you need to get a grip on your libido, Barons.
Fuck you, Miss Lane.
You just try. I'll kick the shit out of you.
You think you could?
Bring it on.
He grabbed a fistful of my T-shirt and dragged me up against him until our noses touched.
I'll bring it on, Miss Lane. But remember, you asked for it. So don't even think about trying to tap out on the mat and quit the fight.
You hear anybody crying, Uncle here, Barons? I don't.
Fine.
Fine.
He swapped the fistful of my shirt for one in my hair and ground his mouth against mine.
I exploded.
I shoved at him and clawed him closer. He shoved me back and yanked me tighter to his body. I pulled his hair. He pulled mine. He didn't fight fair. Actually, he fought exactly fair. He didn't extend courtesies, not a single one. I bit his lip. He tripped me and pushed me down to the stone floor of the cavern. I punched him. He straddled me. I ripped his shirt down the front, left it hanging in tatters from his shoulders.
I liked that shirt,
he snarled. He rose over me, a dark demon, glistening in the torchlight, dripping sweat and blood, his torso covered with tattoos that disappeared beneath his waistband. He grabbed the hem of my shirt, tore it straight up to my neck, and inhaled sharply. I punched him. If he punched me back, I was past feeling it. His mouth was on mine again, the hot silk of his tongue, the sharp, deliberate abrasion of his teeth, the exchange of breath, and the small, desperate sounds of need. A tsunami of lust, no doubt amplified by the fey in my blood, crashed into me, knocking me from my feet and dragging me out to a dangerous sea. There was no lifeboat here in these deep, killing waters, not even a lighthouse, marking the way back to shore with its soft, amber promise. There was only the storm of barrens and the one I seemed to be, and if there were dark shapes moving in the waters beneath my feet that I should probably take a good hard look at and possibly reconsider trying to swim here, I didn't care. He fitted himself to me and began a driving, erotic, rhythmic bump and grind. A lonely boy, a lone man, alone in a desert beneath a blood-red moon. War everywhere, always war. A breath-stealing Scirocco sweeping down over treacherously sifting sands. A cave in a cliff wall. Sanctuary? No sanctuary left anywhere. Barron's tongue was inside my mouth, and somehow I was inside Jericho Barron's. The images were his. We both heard the noise at the same time and exploded away from each other as quickly as we'd come together, scrambling to opposite sides of the small cavern. Panting, I stared at him. He was breathing hard, his dark eyes narrowed to slits. "Is it still spelled?" I mouthed, meaning the entrance to the cave. "To contain only, not to expel."
"Well, spell it again."
"Isn't that easy?"
He melted into the shadows behind a stalagmite.
I focused my attention on the door, tried to sense what was coming, and stiffened.
"Fay, but not Fay. Followed by at least 10 Unseelie."
I stared past Malusha's body at the entrance, tensed to spring. A glint of gold and silver caught my eye in the flickering torchlight.
The amulet! How could I have forgotten?
It was pooled in a pile of chain between his body and the door. It must have fallen off when Barron's had beheaded him. The footsteps drew nearer. I sprang for the hollow. A booted foot came down on it just as I reached it. I stared up the leg and looked straight into the eyes of my sister's murderer.
18.
The Lord Master's gaze flicked away from me, passed with cursory interest over Malusha.
"I had come to finish him myself," he said. "He'd become a liability. You saved me the trouble. How did you do it?"
He studied me, the blood splattered on my face, clothing, and hands, the glaring lack of injuries. A slow smile spread over his exotic, beautiful face.
"You ate Unseelie, didn't you?"
I said nothing. I guess something in my eyes did, though. Framed behind him in the doorway were a dozen or so Unseelie of a cast I'd not seen before, wearing black uniforms with red insignia, clearly his personal guard. He laughed.
"What a surprise you are. Lovely like your sister, but Alina would never have done it."
My sister's name on her murderer's lips incensed me.
"Don't even say her name. Nothing about her is yours. Nothing about her ever was.
If Barron's took this fight from me, I'd kill him." But I wasn't going to get this fight. Not here. Not tonight. The Lord Master's voice deepened, hardened, rolled with the thunder of a legion of voices. It did something inside my head, echoed, whispered, rearranged things.
"Hand me the amulet. Now."
I picked it up and handed it to him, wondering even as I did it what I was doing, why I was obeying. It glowed a faint blue-black invitation the moment I touched it. His eyes widened fractionally. He took it from me swiftly.
"Another surprise," he murmured.
"That's right, you bastard. I am epic, so watch out," I wanted to say, but my vocal cords weren't under my control any more than anything else was at the moment.
"Stand,"
he commanded. The amulet blazed in his hand, eclipsing the feeble light I'd managed to make and been so proud of.
I stood as jerkily as a puppet on strings, mind resisting, flesh obeying. I swayed before the red-robed Lord Master, stared into his too beautiful to be human face, and waited for him to rule me. Had he done this to my sister? Had she been not duped by him, but stripped of choice like I was now?
Come.
He turned, and, automaton-like, I began to follow. Barons exploded from the shadows and hit me like a missile, taking me to the ground beneath him. The Lord Master turned in a whirl of robes.
She stays with me, said Barons.
His voice, too, rolled with the thunder of a multitude, reverberating inside my skull. Of course I was staying with him. What had I been thinking? What the Lord Master did next was so incomprehensible to me that I was still blinking blankly at the opening several minutes after he was gone. He took a long look at my enigmatic mentor, jerked his head at his guard, and left. 19. We raced back to Dublin in the sleek, stolen stealth of Rocky O'Banion's black Maybach. I made no attempt at conversation, nor did Barron's. I had been through too much in the past, however many hours it had been. 27, I would learn later. I had faced a hunter, discovered my specter was not only real, but a greater threat than the Unseelie chasing me. Been locked in a cave, tortured, beaten to the brink of death, rescued, eaten the living flesh of an Unseelie, gained superhuman strength and power, and lost God only knew what, battled a vampire, gotten into a fight with Barons that had skewed dangerously toward the end, lost a powerful dark hallow to my sister's murderer, and worse, been unable to function with any will at all in his presence, and if Barons hadn't been there to save me yet again, I would have trundled off behind my arch-enemy, ensorcelled by the crimson-cowled Pied Piper. Then, when I thought nothing else could possibly startle or surprise me, the Lord Master had taken one look at Barons and walked away. That worried me. A lot. If the Lord Master walked away from Barons, how much danger was I in on a daily basis? I'd been feeling invincible up until those last few moments in the cave, until one man in the room with me had stripped away my will with mere words, and the other man in the room with me had apparently intimidated that one into leaving. Bad and badder. I glanced across the front seat at Badder. I opened my mouth. He looked at me. I closed it. I don't know how he continued driving, because we stared at each other for a long time. The night whizzed by, the air inside the speeding car pregnant with all the things we weren't saying. We didn't even have one of our wordless conversations this time. Neither of us was willing to betray a single thought or feeling. We looked at each other like two intimate strangers who've woken after the lovemaking and don't know quite what to say to each other, so they say nothing at all and go their separate ways, promising, of course, that they'll call, but each time they look at the phone over the next few days, the discomfort and mild embarrassment of having taken off their clothing in front of someone they didn't really even know rises up, and the phone call never gets made. Barons and I had taken our skins off around each other tonight, shared too many secrets, and none of them the important ones. I was about to look away when he reached across the seat, touched my jaw with his long, strong, beautiful fingers, and caressed my face. Being touched by Jericho Barons with kindness makes you feel like you must be the most special person in the world. It's like walking up to the biggest, most savage lion in the jungle, lying down, placing your head in its mouth, and rather than taking your life, it licks you and purrs. I turned away. He returned his attention to the road. We completed the drive in the same strained silence it had begun.
"Hold this," said Barons, as he turned to lock the door on the garage.
He had an alarm system on it now, and punched some numbers in on the keypad. It was nearly dawn. I could see the shades out of the corner of my eye, down at the edge of the dark zone, moving as restlessly and desperately as flies stuck on flypaper. I accepted the delicate glass ball. Eggshell thin and fragile, it was an impossible color, the ever-changing hues of Vlaine's robes on the beach that day in Faerie. I handled it carefully, aware of my heightened strength. I'd bent the door of the Maybach when I'd shut it too hard. Behrens was still pissed about it. Nobody likes a door slammer, he'd growled.
What is it? I asked.
The Jai Orb, a relic from one of the Seelie royal houses.
Can't be. It's not an oop, I told him. He looked at me.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not, I said. I know these things, remember?
Yes,
he repeated carefully.
It is.
No, it's not. For a moment, I thought we were going to get into a is-to-is-not squabble. We glared at each other, resolute in our opinions. Then his eyes widened as if with a startling thought.
Remove the spear from the box, Miss Lane, he snapped.
I hardly see the point, and I'd really rather not. I never wanted to touch it again. I was excruciatingly aware of the unseely flesh inside me, and that I had no idea how profoundly eating it had changed me, and until I understood what my new limits were, I meant to studiously avoid anything capable of damaging a fae.
Then just open it,
he gritted. I could do that, although I still didn't see the point. I slipped it from beneath my arm and lifted the lid. I looked at the spear. It took a moment to sink in. I couldn't sense it at all. In fact, I realized, I hadn't sensed it back in Melusha's boudoir. I'd merely seen it, lying there in the box. I focused on it hard. I wasn't getting the faintest tingle. My she-seer sense was dead. Not numb, not tired, gone. Stricken, I cried, "What's wrong with me?"
"You ate fae. Do the math."
I closed my eyes. A fae can't sense fae oops.
"Precisely. And you know what that means? That means, Miss Lane, that you can no longer find the Shisadu. Bloody hell."
He turned sharply on his heel and stalked into the bookstore.
"Bloody hell," I echoed.
It also meant that Behrens no longer had any use for me. Nor did Vlaine. For all my superhuman abilities, I suddenly wasn't so special at all. "There's always a downside," he had warned. This was one hell of a downside. I'd lost everything I was to become part fae with a fatal weakness. I stayed in bed all day Sunday, slept for most of it. The horrors I'd endured had drained me. It seemed my rapid preternatural healing had taken a toll as well. The human body wasn't meant to nearly die and regenerate. I couldn't begin to comprehend what had happened to me on a cellular level. Despite my exhaustion, the fae inside me kept me feeling on edge, aggressive, like I was bristling with tiny soldiers inside my skin. Fitfully, I dozed, I dreamed. They were nightmares. I was in a cold place from which there was no escape. Towering walls of ice surrounded me, hemmed me in. Creatures had carved out caverns in the stark, sheer cliffs above me, and were watching me. Somewhere there was a castle, a monstrous fortress of black ice. I could feel it drawing me, knew if I found it and entered those forbidding doors I would never be the same again. I woke up, shivering, stood under a scalding shower until the hot water ran out. Bundled in blankets, I set up my laptop and tried to answer emails from my friends, but I couldn't relate to anything they'd written about. Parties and jello shots, and who was sleeping with who, and he said, she said, just didn't compute in my brain right now. I slept. I dreamed again of the cold place. I repeated the scalding shower to thaw myself. I glanced at the clock. It was Monday, 9 a.m. I could stay in bed all day and hide, or I could lose myself in the solace of routine. I opted for routine. Sometimes it's dangerous to stop and think. Sometimes you just have to keep going. I forced myself to groom, exfoliated, masked, and shaved. I nicked my knee in the shower and smeared it with toothpaste when I got out, a trick Alina had taught me when I'd first begun shaving and butchered my ankles more than a few times. As the blood welled in the pale blue gel, tears threatened. At that moment, if I'd had the ability to slip into Fairy and spend time with her again, I might have been too weak. Blood welled in the pale blue gel. I stared at it. I was bleeding. I wasn't healing. Why? I scraped the toothpaste off my wound. It bled freely, pooling in the trickles of water on my still wet leg. Frowning, I made a fist and punched the door jamb. Ow! Stunned, disbelieving, I punched it again. It hurt again, and my abraded knuckles began to bleed too. My superhuman strength was gone, and I was not regenerating. My thoughts whirled. Malouche had talked as if he'd eaten unseelie constantly, even before I'd stabbed him. I'd assumed it was because it was somehow addictive. Now I knew how. If you didn't keep eating it, you reverted to your natural human state. Of course, Malouche hadn't been willing to let that happen. I stared in the mirror, watching myself bleed. It made me think of another time I'd stood in front of this mirror, examining myself. Of crimson I'd glimpsed on myself once before. It's hard to say what causes things to come together in a startling flash of clarity, but images suddenly bombarded me. Splint dropping from my arm, smudges of crimson and black ink on my skin, tattoos on Behrens's torso, Malouche screaming that he'd left the cuff in the alley, demanding to know how Behrens had tracked us, me chained to a beam in the garage, tattooing implements nearby. And I had a small epiphany. "You bastard!" I breathed. "It was all a ruse, wasn't it? Because you were afraid I'd find out that you'd already done it." Games within games. True Behrens form. I began examining every inch of my skin in the mirror. I'd planned to hide it, he had said. I poked. I prodded. I looked beneath my breasts. I checked between the cheeks of my behind with a hand mirror and heaved a huge sigh of relief. I looked in my ears. I checked behind my ears. I found it on the nape of my neck, high up in the slight indentation of my skull, nearly invisible beneath my hair. It was an intricate pattern of black and red ink with a faintly luminescent Z in the middle, a mystical barcode, a sorceress brand. He must have done it the night he'd brought me out of the dark zone, the night he'd splinted and healed me, the night he'd told me to sleep and kissed me. I'd been unconscious for a long time. Then something must have made him begin to worry that I'd find it, worry that if I did, it might push me too far. He was right, it would have. So when I'd returned from Ferry, he'd seized the perfect opportunity to insist on tattooing me for my own good. No doubt he would have just touched up the old one, perhaps added something nefarious to it. When I'd made it plain that if he trespassed against my boundaries so egregiously I'd leave, he must have been in a double bind, unwilling to push because I'd leave, knowing if I found out what he'd already done, I'd leave. He had branded me without my knowledge and consent, like a piece of property. His property. There was a fecking Z on the back of my skull. I traced the pads of my fingers over the tattoo. It was warmer than the skin around it. I remembered lying in the hellish grotto, regretting with every ounce of my being that I hadn't let him tattoo me. If he hadn't tattooed me, I'd be dead now. Ironically, the very thing I'd been determined to leave him over if he'd done it to me was the only thing that had kept me alive. I stared at myself in the mirror, wishing that anything in my life were one-tenth as clear as my reflection. Rowena was wrong. She was so wrong. There are only shades of gray. Black and white are nothing more than lofty ideals in our minds, the standards by which we try to judge things and map out our place in the world in relevance to them. Good and evil, in their purest form, are as intangible and forever beyond our ability to hold in our hand as any fey illusion. We can only aim at them, aspire to them, and hope not to get so lost in the shadows that we can no longer aim for the light. Power is. If you don't use it, someone else will. You can either create with it or destroy. Creation is good. Destruction is evil. That's my bottom line. I could sense the spear behind me, quietly chafing my she-seer senses. I could sense oops again. I had only normal human strength and healing abilities again. I was me, 100% Michaela Lane, for better or for worse. I was back, and I was glad. I hoped the dark flesh had passed through me and left no mark. Life is not black and white. The closest we ever get to either of those colors is wearing them. I got dressed, went downstairs, and opened my store for business. It was a busy day, a little rainy, but not too bad. I found the cell phone Malouche had dumped in the alley when he'd abducted me lying on the counter next to the cash register, beside my boots, jacket, and purse. Barons must have gone searching for me and found them. It had two bars, so I plugged it in to recharge it. I don't take my cell phone responsibilities lightly anymore. I will forever be haunted by the reminder of one floating in a sky-blue swimming pool and the spoiled young woman I used to be. I threw the boots and jacket in the dumpster out back, along with everything else I'd been wearing during my interment beneath the burn. Malouche had touched them. They stank of him, and I would never wear them again. The cuff was not on the counter. I smiled faintly. Barons knew I'd figured out from Malouche's little slip that he'd had some other way to find me. Good. He didn't underestimate me. He shouldn't. I'd had nearly 60 customers by 4 o'clock. I was about to flip the sign for a bathroom break when I sensed someone or something outside my front door. Fay, but not Fay. I stiffened. The cherry-framed, diamond-paned door moved. The bell above it tinkled. Derek O'Banion stepped in, dripping aggression and arrogance. I wondered how I'd ever found him attractive. He wasn't darkly handsome. He was swarthy. His movements weren't macho. They were saurian. He gave me that sharp-bladed smile, and I saw my death waiting on those ivory knives. I knew what he was feeling. I'd been there recently myself. He was pumped up on Unseelie. I was getting better at putting things together. My deductive reasoning skills had improved 100-fold since I'd stepped off that plane from the States. Facts. Derek O'Banion is not a she-seer. He can't see the Unseelie. If you can't see the Unseelie, you can't eat the Unseelie. Which means that if a human who is not a she-seer shows up, pumped up on Unseelie, someone who can see the Unseelie must have fed it to that person, deliberately opening their eyes to a whole new dark realm, like the Lord Master did with Malouche. A normal human can't choose to be turned into a hybrid. He or she must be made into it, initiated into the dark rite by someone in the sea and know. Get out of my store, I said coldly.
Got a lot of balls for a walking dead woman.
Who fed it to you? Red Robe? Pretty Boy? Did he tell you about Malouche?
Malouche was a fool. I'm not.
Did he tell you Malouche rotted from the inside out?
He told me you killed my brother and that you have something that belongs to me. He sent me for it.
He sent you to die, then? The thing he sent you for is the one thing capable of killing Unseelie. Which parts of you are now? Which is how and why Malouche rotted from the inside out. I stabbed him with it. I smiled. Did your new friend tell you that? You have no idea what you've gotten yourself into. Had I just sounded exactly like Barons? Had I just said something to the mobster's brother Barons had said to me when I'd first begun pushing my way into the realm of the Fey? Please tell me my mentor wasn't rubbing off on me. Please tell me we don't grow up and turn into the adults that drive us crazy. I slipped the spear from my shoulder holster and slammed it point first into the counter. It quivered in the wood, shimmering with alabaster light, nearly white. Go ahead, O'Banion, come and get it. I'm fed up with Jack Petunias like you, and would like nothing more than to watch you rot, slowly and painfully. I know you're all juiced up on your new powers right now, but you should know that I'm way more than just a pretty face. I'm a she-seer, and I have a few kick-ass powers of my own. There's no way you can stop me from stabbing you with this if you get within 12 feet of me. So, if you don't mind rotting from the inside out, did I mention that his dick went before his mind did? Step 1 inch further inside my store. Indecision flickered in those cold reptilian eyes. Your brother didn't see me as a threat. Your brother's dead. So are 15 of his henchmen. Think about that. Think hard. He stared at the spear, glowing with its soft, unnatural luminescence. Rocky hadn't known anything about the dark forces around him. Derek had been recently awakened to it, and wouldn't make the same mistakes. I could see it in his face. This O'Banion wouldn't rush blindly to his death. He would retreat now. His withdrawal would only be temporary. He would regroup and return, even more dangerous than before.
"This isn't over," he said. "It won't be over until you're dead."
"Until one of us is," I agreed.
"Get out."
I pulled the spear from the counter, fisted my hand around the hilt. I should have let him walk into the dark zone that day. Instead, out of guilt for past sins, I had saved his life. What an idiot I'd been. I stared at the door after he was gone. My heart rate hadn't even accelerated. I flipped the sign, went to the bathroom, then reopened for business. Behrens didn't show up Monday night or Tuesday. Wednesday came and went with no sign of him. By Thursday evening, it had been 5 days since I'd seen him, longer than he'd ever stayed away before. I was growing impatient. I had questions. I had accusations. I had memories of a fight that had ended in disturbing lust. I'd been sitting in the rear conversation area of the bookstore every evening for hours before a softly hissing gas fire, pretending to read, waiting for him. The bookstore was huge and silent, and I felt alone and a million miles from home. After 5 days, I broke down and dialed J.B. on the cell phone he'd given me. There was no answer. I stared at the display, thumbed through my short contact list. J.B., IYCGM, IYD. I didn't quite have the balls to try the last one. I punched up IYCGM instead.
"Riordan,"
a voice barked. I hung up instantly, feeling embarrassed and guilty. The phone blared with the thunder of 100 celestial trumpets in my hands, and although part of me had fully expected it, it still scared me out of my skin. The display blinked. IYCGM. I sighed and pressed send.
"Mac, are you all right? Talk to me,"
a deep voice growled. "Riordan, the mysterious man who talked about Behrens to people he shouldn't talk to, the man Behrens had been fighting the day I'd gone to Alina's apartment." I hesitated.
"Mac,"
the voice roared. "I'm here. I'm fine. I'm sorry," I said.
"Why did you call?"
I wondered where Behrens was. There was a soft laugh, a deep, rumbling purr.
"Is that what he's calling himself these days? Behrens?"
"Isn't that his name? Jericho Behrens?" More laughter.
"Is he using a middle name?"
"The initial Z. I'd seen it on his license."
"Ah, the Omega. Ever the melodramatic one."
"And the Alpha?" I said drolly.
"He'd probably try to make a great case for it."
"What's his real name?"
"Ask him yourself."
"He wouldn't answer me. He never does. Who are you?"
"I'm the one you call when you can't get Behrens."
"Duh. Thanks. Who's Behrens?"
"The one who keeps saving your life."
I wouldn't have believed two men could sound so much alike, both masters of circuitous answers that went nowhere. "Are you brothers?"
"In a manner of speaking."
I didn't have to press further to understand that, like Behrens, Riordan would only tell me what he intended to tell me, and all the questions in the world would fall on deaf ears unless he wanted me to know something. "I'm leaving, Riordan. He lies to me. He bullies me. He never tells me anything. He betrayed me."
"I don't believe that."
"What? The lying, bullying, or betraying?"
"Betraying. The rest of it is classic. What did you call him? Behrens. But he doesn't betray."
"You don't know him as well as you think you do."
"Open your eyes, Mac."
"What do you mean?"
"Words can be twisted into any shape. Promises can be made to lull the heart and seduce the soul. In the final analysis, words mean nothing. They are labels we give things in an effort to wrap our puny little brains around their underlying natures, when 99% of the time the totality of the reality is an entirely different beast. The wisest man is the silent one. Examine his actions. Judge him by them. He thinks you have the heart of a warrior. He believes in you. Believe in him.
In what? A mercenary? He wants the book to sell it to the highest bidder. The hunters are mercenaries, too.
If I were in your shoes, I'd never call him that. Who are you to talk? You think your motives are so pure? You have such a noble calling? Bullshit. What's good about you? You want blood. You want revenge. You don't care about the fate of the world. You just want your happy little place in it back. People who live in glass houses.
He trailed off as if I should know what came next. I didn't. What? People who live in glass houses, what?
Fuck. You are young, aren't you?
He laughed.
Shouldn't throw rocks, Mac. People who live in glass houses shouldn't throw rocks.
The line went dead. The bell jingled. Barons walked in. Barons! I hastily shoved the phone between the cushions.
Miss Lane?
He inclined his dark head. You tattooed me, you bastard! I got right to the point.
So?
You had no right.
Would you rather I hadn't?
That doesn't make it okay.
But it does, doesn't it? And that's what rankles you. I overruled your wishes. I took care of you in the way a man used to take care of a woman before the world was a place where children could sue to divorce their parents. And if I hadn't, you'd be dead. Are you going to pretend to wish you were dead? I know you. You're crammed full of life and selfishly glad you're alive, and you always will be. If you need a stage and an audience to play the maiden nun who would sacrifice her life to preserve her virginity, to appease your conscience, find it somewhere else. I'm not going to applaud. Will you hang your life on values that have none in the final analysis? When you are too young and naive to see the risks, I encourage your wrath to protect you. Scream at me for it if you must. Thank me for it when you finally grow up.
I changed the subject. He hits me with so much sometimes that it's easier to veer on to some other topic, one that would put me on the offensive and him on the defensive instead of vice versa. Why did the Lord Master take one look at you and leave? What are you, barons?
The one who will never let you die. And that's more, Miss Lane, than anyone in your life has ever been able to say to you. More than anyone else can do.
Vlaine?
Vlaine sure as fuck didn't come get you in the grotto, did he? Where was your golden prince then?
I'm sick of your evasions. What are you? I stalked over to him, punched him in the shoulder. Answer me! He knocked my hand away.
I just did. That's all you're getting. Take me or leave me. Stay or go.
We glared at each other. It seemed like all we did anymore. But there was no real fight in me, and he sensed it. When I went to the sofa and sat down, he turned away.
I assume you are yourself again,
he said, staring into the fire. How did you know that?
I spent the past few days researching the ramifications of what you'd done, to find out if it was reversible. I learned the effects of eating unseelie are temporary.
If you'd bothered showing up on Monday, I could have told you that myself. He turned.
It wore off that quickly?
I nodded.
Are you entirely restored? Can you sense the spear again?
Never fear, your oop detector is back, I said bitterly. Oh, and it looks like O'Banion replaced Malouche for the Lord Master. I filled him in on the younger brother's visit, that he'd eaten unseelie. Barons took a seat on the opposite end of the sofa. Even with all that space between us, we were too close. I remembered the feel of his wild, electric body on top of mine, lying beneath him with my shirt ripped to the neck, the look on his face. I looked away.
I'll ward the store against him. You'll be safe so long as you're inside.
If I was already tattooed, why couldn't you find me when Vlaine had me in Faerie? This was a bit of illogic that had been nagging at me.
I knew you were in Faerie, but I couldn't track you there. The realms shift constantly.
making it impossible to follow the beacon.
Why did you make me wear the cuff if I was already tattooed?
So I could explain being able to find you if I had to.
I snorted. What a tangled web we weave, huh? Does it really work as a locator cuff? He shook his head. Does it do anything?
Not that concerns you.
What did the Lord Master do to me that made me obey him?
Parlor tricks. It's called voice. A druid skill.
You knew that parlor trick yourself. Is it something someone else can learn to do? Me, for example?
I doubt you'll live long enough to learn it.
You did.
You have no training.
Try me.
I'll think about it.
Did you use it on my father? Is that what made him leave the next morning, after he and I had argued all night and I couldn't get him to go?
Would you have had him stay?
Did you use it again when he called here, when I was in Faerie for a month? I was beginning to understand his methods.
Should I have let him fly over and get himself killed?
Why didn't you tell me about the Abbey, Barons?
They are witches and liars. They would tell you anything to woo you to their side.
Sounds like somebody else I know. Actually, it sounded like everybody else I knew.
I make you no promises I won't keep, and I gave you the spear. They would take it from you. Give them half a chance and see what they do. Don't come whining to me when they screw you.
I'm going to the Abbey in a few days, Barons, I told him, and it was a challenge. It was a, you'd better give me whatever freedom I want. After everything I'd been through, my feelings about things had changed. He and I were partners, not oop detector and director, and partners had rights. I'm going to spend some time there and see what they can teach me.
I'll be here when you get back. And should the old woman try to harm you, I'll kill her.
I almost muttered a thanks, but caught myself. I know there are no male she-seers. When he opened his mouth, I said, spare me, before he could toss a pithy comment my way. I know you're male, and I know you see them. We don't need to revisit that. I also know you're super strong and that you rarely touch the spear. So, how long have you been eating Unseelie, Barons? He gaped a moment, then his shoulders began to shake, his chest rumbled, his dark eyes glittered with amusement, and he laughed. It's a perfectly logical assumption, I bristled.
Yes, he said finally. It is. It startled me with its logic, but it's not true.
I studied him through narrowed eyes. Maybe that's why the shades don't eat you. They're not cannibals, and you're full of their brethren. Maybe they don't like dark meat.
So, stab me,
he said softly. I slipped my hand beneath my jacket, fisted my hand around the hilt of the spear. It was pure bluff. We both knew I wouldn't. Behind the counter, the phone rang. I stared into Barons's dark eyes while the phone rang and rang. I remembered kissing him. Remembered the images. The desert. The hot, killing Scirocco. The lonely boy. The endless wars. I wondered whether, if I kissed him again, I'd get inside him again. The phone rang. It occurred to me that it could be my dad. Jerking my gaze away with an effort, I pushed off the sofa and grabbed the phone. Hello? It wasn't my dad. Christian! Hi, yes, actually, I'd love to. No, I didn't forget. I got tied up. I'd had other things on my mind, been wound tight as a knot. But I was okay now. Things were back to normal. I was Mac Lane, she-seer, armed to the teeth with spear, knives, and flashlights. Barons was, well, Barons, and the hunt for the she-sedu was back on. And tonight would be a fine night to spend with a good-looking young Scotsman who'd known my sister and learn what he knew. I'll be there in 40 minutes. I wanted to change and freshen up. No need to come get me. I'll walk. Don't worry, I'll be fine.
A date, Miss Lane,
Barron said when I hung up. He was motionless. In fact, for a moment I wasn't certain he was breathing.
You really think that's appropriate in the midst of our current circumstances? There are hunters out there.
I shrugged. They fear my spear.
The Lord Master's out there.
I gave him a dry smile. Then I guess it's a good thing you won't let me die. He returned my smile with a ghost of one, even drier.
He must be something, if he's worth walking Dublin's night.
He is. I didn't tell him he'd been my sister's friend. Volunteering information isn't something Barons and I do with each other. We let each other stew in whatever messes we've created for ourselves. The day he stops, I'll stop.
Shouldn't I be giving you a curfew?
He mocked. Try. I turned for the connecting doors. I would wash my face, brush on blush, mascara, and lip gloss, and put on something pretty and pink. Not because I thought of this as a date. I didn't. Scotty might have known my sister, and he might know a little about where we were, but he couldn't live in my world. It was too dangerous for the average man, even one armed with a bit of knowledge. I would wear pink because I knew my future was anything but rosy. I would accessorize myself to the hilt, and I would wear flirty shoes because my world needed more beauty to counter all the ugliness in it. I would wear pink because I hated gray. I didn't deserve white, and I was sick of black. As I reached the connecting door, I stopped. Jericho?
Mac?
I hesitated. Thank you for saving my life. I slipped through the door. Before I pulled it closed, I added softly, again. 20. I had to walk through Temple Bar to get to Trinity, where I was meeting Christian. I passed Inspector Jane on the way. He and two other Garda were attempting to subdue a group of combative drunks. He gave me a sharp, furious look as I passed by, making it clear he'd not forgotten about me or his brother-in-law's murder. I had no doubt I would be seeing him again soon. I didn't blame him. I was hunting a murderer, too, and I knew how he felt. Problem was, he was targeting the wrong person. I wasn't. Although you might think after everything I'd been through I would fear the night, I didn't. Night is just day's other cheek. It's not the darkness that frightens me. It's the things that come out in it, and I was ready for them. I had a spear the hunters didn't want to get too close to. I had a tattoo at the nape of my neck that Barons could use to find me any time he wanted to, anywhere. And if I were in Faerie, I suspected news would travel swiftly to Vlaine on a fey wind, and I knew he wanted me alive, too. I might have powerful enemies, but I had powerful protectors. Then there was Riordan, a man capable of surviving a fight with Barons, who was a mere phone call away in case Barons wasn't around. And I had IYD, in case things got really bad. After what I'd seen from Barons, I was confident that IYD would be a real petunia kicker. If things got stupendously bad, I'd bite the nearest Unseelie instead of stabbing it and start chewing. Speaking of Unseelie, they were everywhere in the busy party zone tonight, but I didn't focus on them. I focused on the humans instead. They were my people. I had a job, a purpose, more so than the task of finding the Shi Sadu with which my sister had charged me. I knew now that she'd never meant it to end there, anyway. I'd just been interpreting her message from my selfish viewpoint. Everything depends on it, she'd said. We can't let them have it. We've got to get it first. I knew her message by heart. I'd listened to it over and over in my head. We had to get to it first, so that we could do something with it. Exactly what, I had no idea, but I had no doubt my job would be far from over when it was finally found. Question. When you're one of the few people who can do something to fix a problem, just how responsible does that make you for it? Answer? It's how you choose to answer that question that defines you. I walked through the bustling crowds, dressed in pink and gold, my dark curls fluffed, my eyes sparkling, looking everywhere, inhaling the scents, enjoying the sounds. The spring was back in my step. I had never felt more alive, more charged, more part of the world. I decided I would stop at an all-night internet cafe on the way home, soak up the late-night Irish crack, and download some new tunes for my iPod. I was making a salary now. I was entitled to spend a little of it. I had been knocking on death's door recently, and I was exhilarated to be alive, no matter how bad the current state of my world, no matter how fecked up my life. I stared curiously, interestedly into the faces as they passed by. I offered smiles, collected many in return. I got a few whistles, too. Sometimes the small pleasures in life are the sweetest. I mentally assessed the current state of my game board as I walked. Malouche was now off it for real, a dark, headless rook slain on the sidelines. Derek O'Banion had risen up in his place on the shadowy side of the board, ruled by the Lord Master. I was still willing to keep Rowena mostly on my side, the light side, and I hoped Christian McKelter might fit there somehow, too. It would be nice to have a little company. I was certain Danny was a light warrior. Barons? Sometimes I wondered if he'd built the darned board, set the game in motion. I was 3 blocks from Trinity, down a side street shortcut I'd decided to take, when it happened. I clutched my head and moaned. No, not now, no! I tried to step backward to retreat from it, but it wouldn't let me. My feet locked down right where they were. The pain in my head swelled to a vicious crescendo. I wrapped both arms around my face and cradled my aching skull. Nothing compares to the agony the Shisadu causes me. I ducked my chin to my chest, knowing in moments I would be on the sidewalk, curled up in a gibbering ball, then unconscious, vulnerable to anyone and anything in the night. The pressure ratcheted up violently, and just when I was certain the top of my skull was going to blow off and rain bone shrapnel across the street, 1,000 red-hot ice picks perforated my head, releasing the pressure, creating a new hell of its own, an internal inferno. No, I whimpered, staggering. Please, no. The ice picks had jagged edges and rotated like roasting skewers. My lips moved soundlessly, and I collapsed to my knees, toppled into the gutter, and fell face down into a sour-smelling puddle. So much for pretty and pink and gold. A wintry wind howled down between the buildings, chilling me to the bone. Old newspapers cartwheeled like dirty, sodden tumbleweeds over broken bottles and discarded wrappers and glasses. I clawed at the pavement with my fingernails, left the tips of them broken in gaps between the cobbled stones. With immense effort, I raised my head and looked down the street. It was nearly deserted, scourged clean of tourists by the dark Arctic wind, leaving only me and them. I watched in speechless horror at the tableau that played out before my eyes. After a few interminable minutes, the pain began to ebb, and I dropped my chin in the sour, dark puddle, panting from the aftermath of agony. After a few more minutes, I managed to crawl from the puddle and drag myself back up onto the sidewalk, where I threw up until nothing was left. I knew now where the Shisadu was, and I knew who was moving it around. As momentous and mind-boggling as that information was, it wasn't my primary concern at the moment. I'd been within 50 yards of the dark book, closer to it than I'd ever been before. I'd seen it with my own eyes, and I hadn't passed out. I wonder, Barons had said, dilute the opposite, would it still repel? The Shisadu had existed for 1,000,000 years, and although, according to Barons, fey things change in subtle ways over time, I was quite certain it was never going to get any nicer. In fact, I had no doubt it would only continue to grow consistently more evil. Previously it had repelled me so violently that it had knocked me out within seconds. Tonight I had remained conscious the entire time, closer to it than ever before, and that could mean only one thing. What had changed was me. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Blood Fever by Karen Marie Mawning. Copyright 2007 by Karen Marie Mawning. Read by Joyce Bean. Directed by Stephen Helderman. Engineered by Martin Wozner. Performance copyright 2007 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com.
No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan 49417.